Part 23, Chapter 1. Damn Turl. At first, Johnny had thought he had data on the point positions of the poles. He had no adequate viewing equipment at his house in Scotland. He had only taken a quick scan and a glance at a box Kerr had sent that seemed to have just a piece of cable in it. It was months to day 92, and so he was happy to stay for lunch and see Aunt Ellen and the parson again, and to try to cheer up Paddy. He had flown back to the African mine site in good spirits. He had gotten up this morning all ready to really plow into it. And now, this. Glen Cannon had said the delay was occasioned by Turl spending most of his time outside measuring. Turl apparently didn't like to stay outside very long. Glen Cannon hinted that a bit of air had been injected into breathe gas vials when the office was set up in order to discourage Turl from developing too much of a fondness for wandering around. Also, Glen Cannon had told him they had omitted something in their original planning. They didn't have a picto recorder to record what went on around the platform itself. But they had rigged one in a tree now, and the Brigantes hadn't noticed, and they didn't have to depend on drone overflies anymore. Looking at them now, Johnny saw how meticulous Turl had been in measuring distances to poles. He had almost used a micrometer. But he had not been measuring point positions for teleportation firing. Here it was, the full layout and plan, complete with the exact dimensions, the firing platform, the new position for the console, and a squiggly line. Johnny knew now why Turl had spent so many days on force equations. He had been calculating exactly how close you could put the squiggly line to the firing platform without messing up the teleportation. There it was on his final plan. 7 8/11 feet. All around the firing platform and the new console. The box Kerr had sent contained a little note written with his wrong paw, if Johnny knew Kerr.
To you know who. Here is a chunk that got sawed off by accident. Ha ha. I am digging it up for them from beside that dam to the southwest, where it ain't used anymore. In case you don't know, it's called Atmosphere Armor Ionization Cable. I won't include the parts order number because you won't be ordering any from Cyclo. Ha ha. Also, it is a fine of 3 months' pay to give away company property. So if I'm caught, you owe me another 3 months' pay. You're going to go broke at this rate. Ha ha. You know who. Added, they're paying me a fortune to dig this up. You get your split when we swap lunch boxes. Ha ha ha.
Johnny inspected it. The cross section was obviously the same as that around the dam and site in Kariba. But now he had a look at what it was composed of. It had to be put in right side up and be pointed in the direction you wanted the screen to go. It itself was armored, and how Kerr had cut it, he did not have any idea. The way it worked seemed fairly obvious. The bottom insulation interior was really a reflector. Just above that went the main current source. Then above that, there was another wire, and above that, a third, and so on up. A stack of 15 wires. Each apparently amplified the charge of the one just below it. Out at the end, it must be fastened together with a box, not included here, which assisted amplification. The resulting fabulously boosted charge must be tuned to the fields of the core and ring particles of air atoms. Hit, the molecules of air realigned themselves into molecular cohesion. The final product was an invisible curtain wall entitled Atmosphere Armor Ionization Cable. They had proved it at Kariba. Not even a bullet would go through it. It wasn't a force screen. Those were used in space, and the Hovens employed them on major war vessels. It was air armor. And Turl was going to put this 7 8/11 feet all around the console and platform? Johnny's tentative plan had been to let Turl build the console and set up the firing platform and then somehow seize it. But this changed things. How could one get through a solid curtain like that? Damn, Turl,